Naturally speaking. Naturally
speaking. So, welcome to another episode of Naturally Speaking. This is actually a companion piece or companion episode to another episode that we released alongside this one, strangely enough, about zombieism. And so hopefully you've listened to the other episode where we played a chat that we had in a pub, a panel discussion about the science behind zombies. And
it was an official chat in the pub, not just a
It wasn't just something
Friday night discussion.
Sort of happened. But what we thought we'd do is kind of follow up on it a little bit, because there's so many different interesting topics that you can tie into the idea of science and zombies. And so we thought we'd kind of look at some of the questions that came up, sort of look at them again, but also talk about some of our own research.
Create some hypothetical situations and think about how our own research might apply.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about zombieism from the point of view of looking at the behaviour, looking at potential adaptations to maybe climate change, and then we'll also go on to talk about kind of the genetic aspects and the molecular aspects behind
resistance
and potential resistance.
Actually, before we get into this, I should say I'm Sean Killen. With me, as always, is a couple of zombies, I guess. James Grecian.
Hello.
See, they can't see you acting like a zombie.
No, that's true.
We're actually all dressed up as zombies, but you won't be able to.
Yeah. That's James Buckley, here to talk about zombies as well. And we were trying to get Brad Pitt because with World War Z opening this week, and he actually confirmed and then canceled last minute. So instead of him, we got Daryl McLennan, a PhD student here in the department. What do you work on here, Daryl?
I work on salmon genetics, so not a zombie expert.
Sean is
zombie genetics.
Well, I got coerced in the pub on Friday, so I thought.
Well, you're about as much of a zombie expert as any of us, and that's sort of how this episode sort of came about. There was an event last week, or I guess a couple weeks ago now, as part of the Glasgow Science Festival. The Science Festival is now over, very timely here, naturally speaking. And I'm about as much of a zombie expert as Daryl. As a marine biologist, I was asked to speak on a zombie panel, not a panel of zombies, a panel about zombies. About the science behind zombieism. So there was myself, Roland Cow, who is an actual authority on this sort of thing. Not on zombies, but he works on infectious diseases, so he was there on this panel. And then there was another guy, Dr. Ian Smith, or Professor Ian Smith, who before the panel gave sort of a spoof lecture about zombies and what you would do in a zombie apocalypse. So the three of us sat on this discussion panel.
Daryl was there.
I was there.
So how was it being there live, though, Daryl?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Yeah. To be honest, I was just there because my friends were organizing it. I don't claim to be a zombie fanatic by any means. But the thing that surprised me was there did seem to be a lot of zombie fans there. Because the event sold out pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, it really got me thinking. I mean, at first when I was asked to do it, it seemed like a random sort of thing to, like, why are we talking about zombies? Is it Halloween or something? Did I black out for a few months? But it made sense to go along with the Science Festival because I think that the topic of zombieism really hits on a lot of ideas in science that you might not actually think about until you start talking about it. And as James Grecian was mentioning, the last few days we actually have been talking a lot about zombies is kind of spurred on by this event. And it's amazing how any one of our science colleagues, once we start talking to them about it, they can relate it back to their sort of area of expertise. It's kind of a really interesting platform to start talking about ideas. So I don't know, do you guys have any thoughts on any of the questions that came up? I know there was a few that I would like to have back again.
Yeah, you did say that the question you were most interested in re-answering was the one about why do zombies not by other zombies.
Yeah, so
why are they often not seen to bite other zombies?
Yeah, someone asked a question, why don't zombies bite other zombies?
And is that true? Do zombies not bite other zombies?
Well, I've never seen it happen personally. And in movies,
in your vast experience.
Yeah, in one of the classic things with zombies is that they kind of hunt in packs, and you never see them kind of break down and start attacking each other. And I guess if they are kind of hunting in packs, that would be a bad thing to do. It wouldn't be a strategic thing to start attacking your schoolmates or your shoalmates. What is a group of zombies? A herd?
A pack?
A pack.
Yeah, a pride of zombies.
Yeah, a pride of zombies.
An embarrassment?
A parliament of zombies.
Horde. They're a horde, aren't they? Aren't they classic?
It's a collective noun for zombies. Mm. Well, if you have an idea.
Stagger?
A traipse.
email us in or tweet at us at the NS podcast or naturallyspeaking@gmail.com.
Yeah,
and that's the end of this Facebook episode.
But it wouldn't make sense to start attacking your shoal mates, say I'm a fish biologist.
No, it wouldn't make any sense, evolutionarily speaking.
Yeah.
But hang on, would your shoal mates be those that are infected by the same strain or type of that virus? Or would they be like close family members? It must be the virus.
Like a kin selection type thing.
Yeah. Is there anything?
I mean, this is getting into the other side of it. So, I mean, there's the one side, if you're relying on your group mates to help you hunt, you don't want to be taking them down.
Yes.
But the other side of it, and this is something that Katie Hampson and Roland Cow brought up after, was that from an evolutionary standpoint, if something's already infected and this attacking is a strategy to spread the parasite or the disease, you don't want to be attacking things that already have it. It's sort of inefficient. So I think that's another interesting
point.
Theory.
Interesting point Dowd has brought up was about this comparison towards rabid dogs.
Yeah, do rabid dogs bite rabid dogs?
We don't know.
That's the key. That would be the key sort of comparison there, but fortunately
my
none of us
of
here know.
Dogs, yeah. I think of rabid dogs as just biting anything they see, but maybe they don't.
You see, then in 28 Days Later, it's a rage virus.
Yeah.
Not to give too much away about the movie, but if everything's infected with complete pure rage, as they kind of hypothesize, you would just attack everything. But even in that,
they go in packs.
Zombies go in
right.
packs and attack other people. They don't attack themselves.
They're kind of.
If I remember.
It's sort of like they're angry at everything, but then they see another zombie, it's like, quite like you.
And things like becoming cold, you don't just sneeze on uninfected people, you sneeze on everyone.
Mm hmm. That's true.
If you're not to sneeze,
yeah. If you have no mouth,
you're really malicious if you go about going.
That's true. Yeah. But okay, so what were some of the other questions that kind of gave us? Or do you guys have any thoughts on any of those?
Do zombies sleep? Was one of the other ones that came up.
Yeah, well, that was another one that kind of threw me for a loop a bit.
But they must do because human beings die if they don't get enough sleep.
What I was thinking. I mean, zombies are pretty much immortal anyways, so I mean, do they really need to sleep if they're...
Can they be immortal if they're made up of rotting flesh? Surely eventually...
Yeah, but they're already all rotted. They shouldn't be...
But they'll just rot out and just fall apart.
I mean, yes, if we're going to have any vague biological basis to this, they've got to have some sort of...
But it depends on the rules. So the 28 Days Later zombie, they actually can starve to death because they're just people that are sick. But the ones that are like actually crawling out of the grave, you have to like chop their head off, destroy the brain to kill them. Okay. I think they could just keep going forever.
Use a nice vinyl record and decapitate them at a distance, like Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, exactly. But I also said that at the time that zombies, you don't really see them sleeping in movies, but that's not true. That Will Smith movie, I Am Legend, he walks in and a bunch of zombies that were sleeping.
Because it's during the day, wasn't it?
Was I Am Legend a zombie movie?
The book was vampires, but I think... The movie, they were kind of implying there are more zombies. It all depends on how you define zombie. They're similar to like the 28 Days Later.
The biological species concept.
Exactly.
Can they?
We'll talk about speciation and molecular biology.
Are they a separate species from the human beings, or are they actually?
I mean, the other thing too is that we don't really even know why humans sleep, so it's kind of hard to speculate whether or not zombies would be sleeping. I mean, do zombies actually have any brain activity? They must. I don't know if they're walking around. Because with humans, you can detect differences in electrical activity in the brain. It may be interesting to get a zombie and hook it up to some probes.
I'm not the one to put my hand in to try and get the probes on it.
Take it down to the basement, Shaun, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Experiment on it with...
But then, some zombie movies have zombies that are photosensitive, for example. Mm. So 28 Days Later... You can see basically the only zombie movie I've watched. They have to find shade and darkness during the day, and they only come out at night. So if that's the case, then surely they're basically sleeping during the day. Well, so the footage that you see, they're kind of like in the tunnels, kind of collapsed,
kind of
like
nocturnal.
Half asleep.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But there are, I'll play devil's advocate here, there are zombies that are quite active during the day, Day of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead. Well, that's
so
early
these, like,
in the morning.
Different phenotypes of
different strains, different genres.
Depends on the virus, perhaps.
Well, yeah, I think it depends on the cause.
If a virus,
surely it just depends on the director. But
you're saying they're all fiction.
That's less biologically interesting.
Sorry,
but so why don't we go around and get some opinions from you guys here, stemming from your own expertise. So, James, you do a lot of climate change and migration with seabirds. So how do you see zombies or zombie apocalypse being affected by climate change? You know, now in this age of climate change, is it worse to have a zombie apocalypse than it was maybe 50 years ago?
So we were trying to work it out, but if a zombie is a dead person that's been taken over by a virus and they've got no way of generating their own heat, then, and so they're ectothermic, then in a warmer world, are they going to persist for longer? And so the hotter it gets, the better for zombies? Or is it that because their flesh is rotting, that
they might rot faster?
They might rot faster and fall apart.
Or would it depend on where they come from? If they're African zombies, tropical, would they be therefore more adapted to the warm, and therefore if you took them and transplanted them to say here in Scotland, they might just give up and die? Whereas if you took them from like here, zombies from Scottish zombies, and took them down to somewhere in Africa, they might well just overheat and die.
Is there local adaptation?
Possibly.
Lot of viruses do spread. This, not even talking about zombieisms here, but there are a lot of viruses or bacteria, different types of infections that are adapted for a given climate, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess we just go along with that.
I think our saving grace is that we're endothermic. I did a lot of work on fish disease in the past, and the downfall in fish is that they're ectothermic, so they can't really be specific about where they are in the ocean. So with climate change, they might have to migrate to other areas that they didn't necessarily stay in before, which could make them...
So you're saying that the non-infected humans could go somewhere else where the zombies couldn't...
Exactly. So that's our main advantage.
And of course, yes, of course, we mentioned this, that they could obviously go to very cold places. Deserts maybe as well.
Well,
the problem with that, of course, is you've always got, you know, I guess it was the same with 28 Days Later, like you cut down on air traffic travel to try and reduce the spread of the disease, but you could always probably get one person, maybe sneak through
one zombie
plane.
Sneaks on the plane.
Yeah.
Wanders on.
Zombies on the plane. Why haven't they done zombies on the plane?
Forget to check his passport.
Everything else on a plane.
That will happen.
Zombies on a plane. I'm copywriting that here and now. That would be awesome.
Get Samuel L. Jackson. In World War Z, people actually did flee to the north.
This is the film that's coming out
this
week,
this was in the book they did this.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things that ended up happening, though, is everyone kind of fled up into northern Canada from the U.S., which is where I'm from, and I don't advise doing that. But they weren't prepared, and they ended up basically freezing to death. But then it was a huge problem, because the people that froze to death, when they would thaw, they would be zombies. And so even after they'd sort of eradicated most of the zombies on Earth, they had to worry about all these people that were frozen in the north.
Hang on, if they died, they just became...
Yeah,
zombies.
So in this book, if anyone dies for any reason, there's sort of a latent infection.
Oh, yeah.
Where
okay.
if you die for any reason, you're suddenly reanimated.
I can't think of any... Is there any example of latent infection? It's not that come about when you die. But perhaps when you're like immunocompromised, or maybe...
Dead's pretty immunocompromised.
That is pretty immunocompromised. But I was trying to sort of think that... It's unlikely that a disease is going to come. Yeah. Well, maybe it would make you spring back to life.
At what point are rabbits most infectious with myxomatosis? I mean, the latter stages of that, they're pretty dead.
Yeah. So what is this? This is a parasite.
Myxomatosis is a disease, virus. Now you're asking a difficult question.
Well,
that was released and introduced into the UK to try and eradicate rabbit populations.
Okay.
They did it in Australia as well to try and eradicate rabbits, and then it worked for a while, then they developed resistance, and then they introduced another virus to try and kill them off.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it did. But basically,
but you sometimes see them on, like, if you're, I don't know, playing golf or
confused,
going out for a walk,
yeah.
you'll see a really confused, really slow, weepy looking
really?
Rabbit that's kind of like crawling around really slowly.
Wow. But they can play golf.
Yeah, and they're fine playing golf, but they're not very good at caddies because they don't have any strength.
Although I'm not sure that they go and bite other rabbits.
No, they don't bite other rabbits. They're not going to take your ankles out while you're playing golf. But
that we know of.
Yeah,
that we know of.
Maybe they do.
But so how do we start talking about this? Can't remember now.
Climate change.
So whether or not how...
But the idea that... But I think, the idea that these zombies thaw out... And then they come back to life. The other thing that happens in the book is that they have a big problem with is even after they've eradicated all the zombies wandering around on land, there's tons of zombies that have wandered
into
the ocean.
Spoiler, Sean, spoiler!
Oh, sorry. But there are zombies in the ocean and in lakes and things that have just kind of wandered in there. And every once in a while, randomly, a zombie will come walking out of the lake onto a beach. Because nothing can kill them once they're already dead.
And is that because they don't need oxygen?
Yeah. Either that, or they don't need much oxygen. Diffuses into them. Well, amphibians do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But surely if you're starting to rot and then you put yourself in water, things are just going to start floating off you. Instead of, like, clean skeletons walking back out of the lake.
You wouldn't really want to go, like, to a beach where there's a lot of zombies. Not only for the zombies, but probably because the water is probably pretty dirty.
Fleshy.
Yeah. Just soup.
But, so, climate change. Do we have anything else to say about...
Well, one of the things with that, then, if dead people were being frozen in the poles as a way of stopping them from spreading the disease, we're going to have a clear North Pole within the next 50 years. Does that mean all the zombies are going to come back?
Well, if they thaw out.
But then, yeah. then, because there's no land up there, they'll just sink into the ocean. And then they'll come out of the ocean.
And just randomly walk out of the North Sea every now and then.
It'll be an invasion.
We're done.
Climate change affects hosts as well. So, salmon again, because that's a life. But there's some salmon diseases that are now being found in other fish species. For some flatfish, for example. Mm. And they think that might be down to climate change. So
is that because the hosts are having a harder time fighting off things that they were traditionally able to?
They don't know. They don't know if the change in the temperature is affecting the virus or whether these hosts are migrating to parts of the ocean that they didn't necessarily go before.
I wonder if zombies could actually act as a vector for other diseases once you have them starting to wander around. Because maybe, you know, they don't have much of an immune system being dead.
Yeah,
no. Things can kind of live inside the holes.
Yeah. That's a different podcast. But yeah, if they are in the water, they're getting all kinds of things attaching to them, and then they come out and they're just like just disgusting. Not only can they bite you and turn you into a zombie, but
they're also carrying common cold,
ticks, fleas, fleas, flatworms.
We could carry the plague.
Yeah. Bubonic, or what was the other type of plague?
That pneumonic, but I don't know. If they don't breathe, then maybe pneumonic plague isn't such a problem.
I do think that an interesting thing I saw with James's research, but also in terms of epidemiology as well, is that tagging zombies.
Oh, yes.
If you had an infected zombie, you want to know how far they can disperse and how. Yeah. And basically who they come into contact with.
So you need a way of tracking them.
Contact loggers or, I don't know.
Put contact collars on them, see how many people they come into.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it? And also...
So you could track them with satellites, basically.
Yeah.
Like GPS.
I'm sure you could find some volunteer undergrads to go in just to attach the collars.
I'll analyse the data, but I'm not attaching the collars myself.
Exactly, yeah. I think I'd be happy to analyse any data that... that the undergrads could get from it, yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of your research, so you're a molecular ecologist. I think there's a lot to offer there in terms of zombieism, understanding it. I mean, what about the genetic basis for zombieism or zombie immunity? Could people be...
I think, because I'm not very doing much about the sort of the things that could potentially cause zombieism, but if it was a disease, undoubtedly there's got to be some resistance to it, so people get bitten and they would not... express zombie symptoms. Is that possible?
That could have a genetic basis.
Yeah,
it is possible. It's theme of a couple of zombie movies.
28 Days Later?
I wouldn't want to ruin the ending.
Oh, crap.
Doesn't that guy wake up and he's immune and then he meets someone else who's immune?
Well, his wife is immune. Robert Carlyle's wife, right? Or she's partially immune or something like that?
So you could have people that are carriers. Zombies.
She is a carrier, but she's immune.
So if you wanted to find out the genetic basis of such traits, you could maybe try and, as I said, this is where we're talking about then whether you could interbreed zombies and people and sort of normal humans as such. If they could interbreed, then you might be able to uncover, if they had loads and loads of progeny, you might be able to uncover the genetic basis of this trait. Or you could just like scream lots and lots of people and zombies.
That
like,
would be screen, you definitely need home office
scream,
permission.
So just like using the genome-wide markers and lots of genetic markers, and then also quite a large number of individuals with like resistant and susceptible, as in
zombies.
You want
to do whole genome sequencing of zombies?
It'd be quite easy nowadays. People do it all the time to look at the genetic basis of genetic basis for resistance to particular, cancer or other infectious diseases, and also the genetic basis of susceptibility. So it's presumably possible.
I think you'd have trouble getting a zombie human breeding program off the ground.
I don't think I'd want to do that.
You'd need a lot of funding to pay the volunteers.
You've got,
in vitro, I guess.
Ethically a bit wrong, I think.
Well, first year undergrad students, most of them act like zombies half the time.
They've probably got things hiding in the holes as well.
Oh, God.
I could open up a whole can of worms as well in terms of picking potential suitors. So you might say, he's got a great job and he's got a nice car, but he's not zombie resistant, so.
So you could actually look for that in like a mint.
Well, people could start screening programs.
Yeah.
And what would Guardian dating site at the bottom thing with like zombie yes or no?
Yes. Male looking for zombie, female looking for zombie, zombie looking for zombie.
Lonely zombie for nights in.
Eating flesh.
Enjoys walks in the park at night attacking people. How would this...
also the question is, what would be zombieism resistance?
I mean, what would that entail? Would it be at the cellular level, the immune system, or some other aspect, like a receptor or hormonal thing that just doesn't cause the aggression?
My idea of zombie resistance would just be a double-barreled shotgun, I think, based on most of the movies.
Yeah.
Because how many of the symptoms of disease also are a consequence of the body responding to the infection? I'm not quite sure what resistance to zombieism be, as in, would it be just like you just don't experience anything, you just get bitten and you just go, that hurt.
Well, I guess
I didn't really miss that part of my arm anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on how to avoid them as well.
I wouldn't, yeah.
It's more just ripping the flesh off you.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very nice.
The downside.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Yeah, an issue.
An issue.
But yeah. I wonder if you get into a situation where it's a behavioral thing, where it's just the, like, people who are smart enough to avoid them or do certain things
that's
are the ones that don't
behavioral.
Get bitten.
Yeah.
I mean, because there could be a genetic component there, but then behavior is influenced by all kinds of other things too. But
then if you can get blood-to-bloods, you don't necessarily have to be bitten, you just need to be around.
Yeah, but I can't think of any examples offhand, but there could be certain behaviors that predispose you to different diseases in general. And so with zombieism, it could be the same thing.
Going out at night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Walking around on your own.
Walking around cemeteries.
Not being able to run fast.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
Or run.
Or run.
Yeah. People who can't run would be more prone to being.
But in that case, then you would imagine that the zombies wouldn't be. I suppose it depends on whether the zombies actually pick up the traits of the people that they, or whether they enhance them in some way. Are there particular traits of these humans enhanced? Can they run faster, be more powerful than they could be? Because it seems to be quite confused.
Yeah, some zombies run around really fast. And they're really vicious, and other ones just kind of lumber along.
And they're normally quite a lot stronger, aren't they? Or is it just the fact that they're just so numerous that it doesn't matter?
Again, I think it really depends.
Breaking down doors and things, or
well, like the old classic, like Night of the Living Dead zombies, they kind of just bang their head against the wall until it eventually breaks down. Or because there's so many of them there, they'll eventually just kind of overwhelm and break down the walls and doors and stuff like that. But the crazy rage zombies of a lot of more recent films, they seem to just, actually actively bash things open and are maybe a bit stronger.
It's probably because the slower ones become, in an age of modern technology, they become increasingly less frightening.
Well, yeah.
And I think...
Become sort of desensitized.
Yes, well, you just get in a car and drive. And they're not really going to, they're not going to be able to do that.
Unless there's a zombie in the back seat.
Unless there's a zombie, that would be a very classic scene in a movie.
That could be a title for a film. Zombie in the back seat.
Zombie on planes.
Zombie in a car. Zombie in a car.
Okay. Well, what about Daryl? I mean, so your current research.
You're a zombie.
Your research now is looking at aging, in fish.
Yeah.
Right? And telomeres. So, telomeres, how they contribute to aging processes. Do zombies have telomeres? What's the molecular basis of aging? Yeah, in zombies.
I guess if zombies have genetics still, then they're going to have telomeres. But the question is,
do they have cellular replication?
Yeah. So for telomere loss to happen, cells need to replicate.
Mm-hmm.
So if cell replication is still happening in zombies, then the telomeres are going to decrease. But I guess they've got bigger things on their mind.
But there's some species where telomere length increases, for example, some bird species where with cell replication telomeres.
Exactly.
So you might well find that you could have like a genetic reversal of telomere division, so that once you've developed a zombieism trait, that your telomeres get longer and longer, so you can live forever.
Well, I mean, I think one of the, from what I understand, you're more of an expert, but one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of control over telomeres shortening, because I guess there's a risk of cancer there. It's sort of a trade-off.
That's the biggest theory, there's a trade-off between... There's an enzyme called telomerase, which increases telomere length. But the downside of that is if it's uncontrolled, it could cause tumours. So, for example, in some tissues, like your brain, there's still quite a lot of telomerase activity. But the downside is you're more susceptible to tumours in the brain. fish have a lot of telomerase, actually, because fish... Most fish species tend to grow throughout their life,
yeah.
So that they need a high level of telomerase, whereas we stop growing quite early on in life. So, yeah, I guess zombies could have some way of switching this.
Yeah, because for them, other diseases aren't going to be a big deal, the trade-off, the downsides.
Well, they're dead, I think.
Yeah.
A tumour's not a big issue after that.
They're only using half their brain.
Yeah, they're like, oh God, I've got a tumour.
It does sound like the critical issue is...
Yeah.
It sounds like the critical issue is... Do their cells replicate, even if at a reduced rate?
Yeah, so if a zombie loses an arm, does...
Well, yeah, you don't really see a lot of regeneration of tissue, I don't think.
They are fairly decomposing often. So, yeah. I mean, does that mean that they are just... They're just dying and they're not replicating?
That's a good question.
Sufficient numbers of cells to replace them.
Maybe when you're finished with the zombies in the basement, I could have them after you and start chopping their lungs off and see what happens.
Maybe they're like a starfish. Once you chop the arm off, it just kind of grows a whole other zombie.
We've got a great telomere lab in the department as well, so
okay.
That wouldn't be an issue. We could get some analysis going.
Well, why don't we do it then?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
How much are zombies? Can we get them off the internet?
The maintenance costs are cheap.
Yeah, the home office get procedures.
Yeah, I don't know if you need a license to work on zombies. I mean, they are vertebrates, but on the other hand, they are already dead. So.
And I imagine there might be some sort of emergency situation whereby you're just allowed to do whatever you can to try and stop them.
I think you'd have to have containment procedures in place.
Yeah.
Just small ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Running shoes.
Yeah.
Well, we've got people
in a car outside with no back door for a zombie to get in.
Baseball bat.
Yeah. And a one-way ticket to the Antarctic. Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know. Is there anything else? Any other topics? We've been going on for quite a while here.
I imagine it's
there's so much to talk about when it comes to zombies.
It's probably best to draw a line under it and assume that we'll just save many more ideas until there is a zombie outbreak.
Well, I think we should maybe just have like a spin-off podcast, Zombie Cast, a companion to Naturally Speaking. Why not? But okay, so anything else? Is that it, pretty much?
I think we can just bury this one.
Okay. All right. Well, Daryl, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Would have been nice to have Brad Pitt, but you've been an adequate replacement. But
thanks.
Until next time. Thank you. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Naturally Speaking podcast. If you've got any ideas for future shows or want to get involved, then please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is naturallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Naturally Speaking is a podcast from the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine at the University of Glasgow. For more information, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the NS Podcast. And you can download future episodes and find more information at our blog at naturallyspeakingpodcast.wordpress.com.
Should I do it?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, welcome to another episode of Naturally Speaking. That's my radio voice. With me, as always, well, fuck, I can't start again.
That was good, that was good.
You've got a radio voice for that. I have to put one on, mate.
Okay. You sounded like proper, like, radio, North American radio station. I can imagine that. Just like,
oh, God.
You're listening to KCLR.
Yeah, KCLR.
92.2.
Hello.